Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.penlive.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Tello di Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
All right, bus people. Wow, that's great. You know, we had our share. Oops, what was that? I had a little burp. We had our shares of rain here, but the bus people are still happy and thrilled and all that stuff, and that's always great to see them out there drinking wine and listening to the show and having a good time. Mike's not with us tonight. Mike is doing his real job, like we all have, and he's working and having a good time at his job, we hope, anyway. But you've still got me. You've still got All About Wine. You've still got the show, as always. And we have ourselves a great guest tonight. I'm really excited about this. I'm really looking forward to this. We're going to bring him on in a couple minutes here. But a couple of things first. Number one, as I always like to point out, and he's not here to thank me, but, you know, check out his show. He's on... he's a DJ on a blog every Friday and Saturday night. DJ Mike, .com. You can check it out. I'm trying to find the paper I have here with that on it, and I can't find it for some reason. So, but DJ Mike, .com. And there's a link to it and all that stuff. So every Friday and Saturday night he is on the radio, and they're playing music and taking requests and all sorts of good stuff from you. So check it out if you haven't already, and you can listen to Mike every Friday and Saturday night and spinning tunes. And he does a good job. I tune in on him quite a bit, and does a real nice job. And he also, you can correspond with him through IM. He's sitting there listening and talking to people all the time. So, again, check him out, djmike.com, and it gives you links to his program and all that. Tonight, we are going to talk about wine, but a little bit different pace here. We're going to go at it a little bit differently here. Up at the winery, I had a visitor come in, and we started talking. I found out he is a state representative, was a state representative. He served two terms. He's a lawyer. And he's the one that introduced into Florida the Merlot to go bill. We'll have him talk about that and a lot of other stuff. We were also talking about what it takes to pass some laws here to get shipping in all the states and everything. And I said, be on the program. And he says, okay. And so we have him on the program. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to jump out and call him here. I am going to give you some background music here for a few minutes, while a little bit of jazz, while I go out and get him. And I don't do this a lot, so I'll try to get back as fast as I can. But hang with me, and we'll be back real soon. I like that music. That's fun. I'm going to bring him right on the air here. And I think there he is. Kevin, welcome to Florida State's Wine. Boy, I'll tell you, I haven't done that in a long time. Welcome to All About Wine. I'm glad to have you on the program tonight. And I just gave a quick introduction to you, but you can fill us in more. You are a former state representative from District 47 in Florida. You served two terms there, and now you are back in law practice. Is that not correct?
Well, actually, four terms in the legislature, total
four.
8 years, and I've been in practice, law practice, in private practice continuously since 1991.
Wow, very good.
I never gave up my law practice while I was serving in the legislature.
Oh, good.
They tell you it's a part-time job, but. part-time work.
That's usually the way it is for most stuff. What do you practice in law? What is your specialty?
I have the luxury, because it's my own firm, of being able to do a variety of things and pick and choose as appropriate. But I have concentrations in commercial and business litigation, transactional matters, contracts, contract disputes, non-competes, some personal injury, wrongful death, products liability, and then a host of things in between. I try to stay away from criminal defense work because I was a prosecutor and I enjoy putting people in jail. I don't enjoy necessarily keeping them out of jail. I did enjoy putting them in jail.
So there's one field you stay away from.
Right. And family law gets way too emotional for me, so I try to steer clear of family law as well.
Oh, yeah. Family law can be a little tough. I understand that, yeah.
And then, of course, the germane thing to your program and what we do, given my years in the legislature, I do some lobbying for select clients in advocating, doing legislative advocacy for various pieces of legislation.
Oh, very good. And that leads me into what I was just going to talk about there. Before we came on, before I brought you on, we were talking about your Merlot to go bill that you introduced into the state legislature. Explain what that is for all those people out there who are not familiar with it.
Sure. And just so I'm clear, in the interest of full disclosure, I was one of the co-sponsors of the bill. I wasn't the main author, but it was the effort was started by the former and now deceased Senator Jim King about 10 years ago. And it took us a number of years to get it through the legislative process for a variety of reasons. But the Merlotigo bill basically allows a customer who goes to a restaurant and orders a bottle of wine to be able to, at the conclusion of their meal, if there's wine left over, and how many of us have gone out to dinner where, you know, you've had a little bit of wine and it's a very nice bottle and you paid quite a bit for it, and there might be a third of the bottle left and you had to leave it. So under the Merlot-to-go bill, if you have a remainder of a bottle of wine you purchased, they can essentially cork it and bottle it and package it up in a way that satisfies the law so that you can take it home.
Fantastic. And I remember when that came into law, we were all cheering and saluting and happy and just all wiggly because it was such a great thing to have.
You know, it's like one of those common sense things that you wonder why it took so long to get it in the first place. But what you have to understand about the legislative process is there's an expression we used to use up there. It's all about whose ox is getting gored. And what that what that translates into is that there's always somebody that makes money off of the status quo. And the question then becomes, are the people that are paying for the lobbyists to be up there to preserve the status quo more powerful and more influential than the people who are paying for lobbyists to change the status quo? And then you couple that with the fact that, you know, a lot of these things have to do with timing and who's there at what time and what's popular and what's not. So there's a whole public sentiment thing that flows into that. But the idea is that the people that continue to make money as the way things are like to keep things that way, and it's much easier to kill legislation than it is to pass it. So the tilt of the windmill, if you will, always goes toward the person or the group or special interest that is trying to keep things the way they are and wants to defeat legislation as opposed to passing it.
Wow. Wow. You know, I mean, I've never heard it described that way, but that's something that is very interesting. That explains a lot of why things are not passed and why a lot of stuff that we hear about just sort of fades away, which in some instances it's good, but a lot of instances it's bad.
Well, that's true. And what it does is, it's very interesting. Our founding fathers who set up a very brilliant system taken from our English forefathers is that the idea of the three branches of government and the bicameral legislative process and so forth are all built around one premise, and that is to allow the laws to evolve as opposed to engaging in revolutionary change. We talk about evolutionary change. And so the difficulty in passing new laws forces those who want to change the status quo to engage in the art of compromise and then to work it in such a way that you gain momentum over a sufficient period of time that your idea gains its own inertia and ultimately can pass. And sometimes there are great ideas that never do pass because they never gain that inertia.
And the reason, and let me explain this to my guests out there that are my audience, is the thing that we were talking about this at the winery, and you brought up the fact of what it would take, based on what you were just saying, what it would take to change the law so that we can ship wine around this country or out of state or in states and stuff like that. And just from what you just said there, it's almost defeated before it even is presented because that's the status quo.
And the status quo and evolving out of the era of prohibition in this state, as is followed in many others, not everywhere, but in many states, and in particular here in Florida, we have this this three-tier system that's in place that has empowered the middleman, the distributor, and all of the rules and regulations therefore evolve to ensure the preservation of that middleman in the system. And so if you were to pass legislation that would permit the direct shipment of wine, essentially whose ox is getting gored? The middleman. They get cut out in the three-part system that is in place here in Florida today. And so that's why, and that lobby, that distributor lobby in this state is extremely powerful.
Oh, yes.
And why is that? Because the amount of money that they collect every year as part of the existing system totals into the hundreds of millions of dollars. So spending a couple of million dollars on a cadre of influential lobbyists is a small drop in the bucket to preserve the status quo, as opposed to putting at risk the ability of the consumer to directly deal with the wholesaler, the manufacturer.
I am sitting here shaking my head from what you just said, because it's so true. It's so sad, but it's so true, because we are battling the distributors all the time. And it's not just here in Florida, but it's around the country. We've talked to wineries around the country, and it's the same thing everywhere. This distributor just has so much power.
And you know, it's the concept of the golden rules. He who has the gold makes the rules. And the ability of the distributors, given the revenue streams that they have enjoyed since Prohibition under the current three-tiered system, allows them to ensure that they have to take a certain portion of that money every year and dedicate it to making sure they have a lobby corps in place to fend back any attempts to whittle away at their stronghold. And so, and like I said, it's much more difficult to pass a law than it is to kill a law. So the money that they invest in their lobbyists are more toward blocking legislation than it is to advancing legislation. And in that way, they can preserve the status quo.
That's so sad. Now, I understand, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand if a bill is introduced into one session and that session ends without action on that bill, the bill dies and has to be reintroduced and start all over again.
That is absolutely correct. The same is true for the U.S. Congress, that at the end and conclusion of a particular session, if that legislation is not passed, that bill, that piece of legislation is dead for that year.
And so it can't be brought up and say, okay, we've already went this far, let's finish it, or whatever. They have to start from
the
beginning.
Have to start all the way back at the beginning. That's correct.
Oh, wow. Okay, now,
so,
go on.
I was just going to say, so to your point about the desire on the part of the consumer to who wants to be a prudent connoisseur of wine and feels that it should be appropriate to be able to deal directly with a winery, and there are many wineries that would prefer to do it that way, especially small wineries that can't afford some of the high price of admission into the normal distribution channels because they don't generate the volume. The question becomes, how could the consumer fight back and collectively join forces with the winemakers and create a method of providing direct distribution? And I spoke with you about this the other day, and I hope we have a chance to get into this on your program, and that is there's probably only one way to do that. And the only way that would reasonably be feasible to do that would be to introduce legislation at the national level in the U.S. Congress and have it pass through the U.S. Congress or by executive order. It seems lately that our president feels that many things can be done by legislative fiat, and until it gets challenged in the court, it becomes the law of the land. So I suppose under the current regime, if we could get the president president to sign an executive order allowing for direct shipment of wine. Until it wound its way through the courts, we would enjoy a very free-spirited open commerce system for a period of time.
You know, that's a good – I haven't thought of that angle, but that's great. I, you know, everyone out there, send the president an email right now. and let's get this done so we can all enjoy wine. That's great, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the concern that is always expressed about direct shipments are the issue of, you know, does the product get into the hands of minors? How do we experience controls and so forth on those things? And you know, those can be made as a valid point in any instance where you're talking about wine shipments. But the fact is there are exceptions to the rules now where wine can ship, and we don't seem to fret about that. And the other thing is if you have – a parent who's shipping hundreds of dollars of expensive wines to their home, and they know and are expecting that to come, and they make it signature only, the argument about it falling into the hands of minors becomes specious when you inject a simple little caveat into legislation that says that when it's shipped, that the shipping company, let's say it's FedEx or UPS, that they're required to get the signature of someone who shows ID over the age of 21. That invalidates then any argument that comes along that says, oh, that this can end up in the hands of minors, because you've got a system in place with an ID check that's no different than a, you know, 21-year-old cashier behind the counter at 7-Eleven checking your ID at the counter there.
Right. You know, and like we said at the winery, and this is something I've always argued about, is the fact that when it comes to wine, a minor is not going to get online or on the phone, order a case of wine or even six bottles or whatever. To begin with, they are not going to have credit cards. Secondly, if they're going to steal their parents' credit cards, they're going to get caught on that. So that is a deterrent in itself. And then they're going to say, okay, I want to order six bottles of wine from you. What's the cost? All that. We quote the cost. They say, okay, ship it to me. And then they're going to wait for a week or 10 days or however long it takes for the wine to get to them so they can have themselves a bottle of wine. Miners don't do that. Miners go down to the local liquor store, the 7-Eleven or whatever, stand outside. When they see somebody walking in, say, hey, would you mind picking me up a six-pack of Bud while you're in there? And that's how they get their booze. I mean, this has been going on forever. And, you know,
well,
how about
even simpler than that? If a miner wants to get their hands on wine as opposed to beer, which is probably the more of the beverage of choice for teenagers, but if they do and mom and dad have a wine cabinet or wine closet or wine cooler or whatever, when mom and dad are not home, what blocks them from just going and helping themselves in that manner? So, you know, the idea that we've got to create all these controls because we can't have minors being shipped wine is really specious. And like I said, if you inject one simple feature into a piece of legislation like that requires that the shipping company is required to obtain a signature of someone who shows ID at the time of delivery, then that argument flies away that even if the minor had been the one who ordered it, you've got to deliver it to someone who's presented proper ID demonstrating that they're over the age of 21.
And if someone there is over 21 for buying it for the minors, they're not going to worry about shipping wine anyway. They're going to go down and buy it for them. So, you know.
Right.
The whole argument.
The only way we can really, truly, effectively get around the three-tier system, in my view, would be if there was national legislation that utilized the Commerce Clause, which has been used for many decades, beginning back with a very famous case in Florida dealing with mudflaps, where the Supreme Court held that any legislation that essentially is passed at the state level that interferes with interstate commerce can be invalidated and preempted because it becomes an unreasonable interference on interstate rights. And so if a piece of legislation at the national level were crafted and introduced and tied specifically to findings on how the restricting the shipment of wine interferes with the Commerce Clause, if that were done with the right findings and then adequate safeguards built in, like what we were just discussing with the delivery restriction to someone who presents ID over the age of 21, you could probably create a single unitary piece of national legislation that would wipe out the restriction that exists in the three-tier system in various states and create one uniform process by which wineries could ship their wines throughout the country. And to make it so that it's not going to receive an undue influence, shall we say, by some of powerful lobbyists that would undertake to defeat this at the national level, you might want to restrict it to wineries that don't produce any more than a certain number of barrels or bottles of wine per year, so that if you're at a lower tier, a very small independent mom-and-pop type distributor or wineries that aren't going to be real competitive anyway within the normal distribution system, that this gives those small wineries that avenue of direct shipment that can allow them to stay in business and keep jobs and allow those businesses to fuel the economies of their respective states.
Yay. Exactly. But again, you're looking at such powerful lobbies all over the country. I mean, you know, we've got a big distributor here in Florida that is enormous, and there's others that we've talked about to other wineries across the country, and there's some enormous lobbies pulling in millions, if not billions, of dollars a year. And again, like you just said, it's easier to stop a law than it is to pass a law.
Right.
You know, the incentive behind that would be almost overwhelming.
Well, that's why I'm saying you have to understand going into it what you're up against. You have to understand that concept of whose ox is getting gored and how there is a huge motive on behalf of the status quo to preserve that. So you design your legislation out of the gate so that you carve out and remove the most offensive components of that would allow for the middleman who is dealing in high volume with the larger distributors around or wineries around the country, that you're not cutting into that aspect of the business. But truly, if you were to talk to any of the major distributors and you were to talk to them about a small winery that produces, you know, a very comparative, you know, to some of the big houses like a Mondavi or, you know, Behringer or any of the big well-known houses that put out the millions of barrels of wine as opposed to, you know, tens of thousands, you would find that if you crafted the law to favor the small wineries that had and were shipping under X number of bottles, and you pick the number, you're in the business, you could best tell me where that number would lie, but finding that fine dividing line between helping the mom-and-pop wineries to have a direct source of distribution through the Internet and otherwise, but that such that it wouldn't infringe on the turf of the big dealers, you could probably find that middle ground in a place that they could live with.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Before we go any further,
you'd have to do that out of the gate.
Yeah, that from the beginning. Before we go any further, you mentioned the mudflap law in Florida that Florida passed that was stopping interstate commerce. Would you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. There was a very famous case around the turn of the century. Well, not the turn of the century, because this century just started 14 years ago. But in the 30s, there was a famous case that arose in Florida where the Florida legislature passed a law that restricted the size of mud flaps on tractor trailers coming into the state to make deliveries. And it was all done under the guise of, you know, better protecting the cars and the roadways, that these flaps were necessary because these trucks were kicking up all kinds of debris and complaints. And the rumor has it, the backstory is that there was some legislator that was, you know, traveling up to Tallahassee and got his windshield cracked open by a rock flying from a truck that wasn't properly equipped with mud flaps. So they became hell-bent on passing a law that changes. Well, in any event, they passed this legislation that created some very strict requirements about what tractor-trailer trucks needed to be equipped with when coming into the state to make delivery. And in so doing, the standard that was set by the Florida legislature was different than the standard mud flap that was used predominantly throughout interstate commerce by trucking delivery companies around the nation. And so what was happening is these trucks were entering into the state of Florida, and then they were being pulled over and being ticketed and fined substantially because they didn't have the correct mud flap, or they didn't have them at all. But more importantly, the ones that did, the statute set the size and width parameters, et cetera, and if you didn't comply with that, then the law enforcement could pull you over. So that generated a big hoopla, and there were some national trucking companies that felt that was intruding on their cost of doing business, if bringing shipments into the state of Florida, and every time they did it, they had to risk getting a ticket, or they had to change all of their equipment on their trucks, which was very costly. So they brought a lawsuit, and it wound its way all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
And the U.S. Supreme Court basically stated in a seminal case that a individual state, while it has a great deal of autonomy at passing laws for the health and welfare and safety of its citizenry, cannot do so where the act of that legislation intrudes on national legislation, which is devolved from the U.S. Constitution, and the Commerce Clause is one of the fundamental clauses in the U.S. Constitution that says that there shall be no abridgment of the right of interstate commerce. And so individual states are not necessarily free to pass legislation that's going to intrude unreasonably on the ability of interstate commerce being able to transverse from state to state. And it was thought when they wrote the Constitution that this was really the key to a union of states in being able to collectively operate as a united group of states, that they had to have in place a uniform set of laws that would allow for the expansion and burgeoning of commerce without intrusion by individual political agendas in individual state legislatures. So the Commerce Clause then has become a vehicle over the last century for the courts to invalidate what they feel is legislation that unreasonably intrudes and encroaches in the ability of there being a national policy that favors, unrestricted access on interstate commerce.
Would not that apply to wine shipments then? Because so many states allow it and then others are so restrictive and stuff like this. Wouldn't that apply to wine shipments? Because if I want to ship it to Pennsylvania, I really can't because they got the state stores there. Or there's a few other states that are very restrictive. That stops me from having actual interstate commerce. Why doesn't that apply to wine?
Well, that's a great question. I can't say that I can answer that question for all states that do it. But part of that lies in the fact that in order for a law to be invalidated, somebody has to challenge it. So, In other words, there are lots of things that can be on the books and can be laws that people comply with because they feel that they require that and they don't want to receive the brunt end of law enforcement or a regulatory agency coming in and shutting them down, so they comply. But the fact is that until such time as somebody challenges the law in court and says, hey, I don't think this is right. I don't think that you should be able to do this, especially in this day and age. Until that occurs, then you're not going to have a pronouncement by the courts that a particular state's laws with respect to that wine shipment is preempted under the Commerce Clause. And I don't know, I can't speak for the challenges that have occurred in every state as to whether anyone has aggressively previously attempted those challenges.
We have had the president of the group, FreeTheGrapes.org, on a couple of times on the program. In fact, I suggested you to look it up. I don't know if you had an opportunity yet or not, but he's been on a couple of times. I'm going to have to give him a call and ask him what procedures or if they have challenged some of these state laws through the Commerce Clause, because it just, like, it's constant. It's a constant battle to get a state so that you can ship wine in and out of it without all sorts of restrictions and stuff. And it really gets to be prohibitive for a lot of small wineries. And, you know, let's face it, most of this country is made up of small wineries anyway. I mean, most of us are not large wineries. So,
well, interestingly enough, and you brought up a good point, the challenge would have to be brought by a small winery because they have to have standing to challenge the existing law. So you would need a small winery that says, I don't think the current existing system operates in fairness to wineries like mine, and I feel that the Commerce Clause should invalidate the restrictions against me to shipping my wine as long as I undertake certain precautions to do it in a way that protects against issues like delivery to minor or whatever. And even if you self-impose in your own shipments that you coordinated with, that the shipper is required to check ID on the other end, regardless of whether that's the law, you could make that a condition of shipment. And in your contract with the shipper, let's say FedEx, you can say, for my shipments, I am requiring that your delivery driver get a signature after checking ID on the receiving end. And so having dispelled the one concern about whose hands the wine is getting into, then that small winery says there should be no other real limitation that should preclude me from being able to direct ship my wine to the customer. And it's an unreasonable restraint on interstate commerce. You'd have to challenge, and then you bring that case into court.
But and there we go again to the fact that small wineries don't have the money to do that. We are in a situation where we just sort of shrug our shoulders and shake our heads and say, oh, well, and we go with the status quo because we just don't have the money to challenge that stuff for lawyers and everything else.
Well, here's a strategy for that. Okay. The strategy for that is you form or are part of already an organization of small wineries where you have direct communication with each other as an organized group. And then as an organization, you collect dues and create a fund that everybody chips into. And then you select that member of the group that wants to be, I don't want to call them the sacrificial lamb because hopefully they'll be the David and Goliath story here that wins the battle. But a selection is made as to what we'll call the cleanest plaintiff litigant to go into that. Somebody who's squeaky clean, runs their operation fairly and easily, and is above reproach. But you use that organization as a tool of collecting and having everybody pay in a small amount to create a legal fund that would allow then for the litigation to ensue. And there are a lot of lawyers out there, I can tell you, having practiced for nearly 30 years, that would be willing on perhaps a interesting hybrid fee basis to say, I'm willing to do this on a reduced hourly rate for X or even for a flat fee of X if we are successful in this suit and you are then allowed to start shipping wines. I'll make a deal that I get 5% of the gross for the next 3 years as my back-end commission, if you will, or contingency kicker for succeeding in the lawsuit. And if we don't succeed, then you don't owe anything more.
Ah, all right. Well, there you go. That would be the way to do it because, you got the big companies that aren't going to be doing that because they're big companies and they got their distributors and it's all over everywhere. So it is the small wineries that are facing these problems. It's not the big ones.
That's right. And then what you do is, you see, it's while that lawsuit is pending that it then becomes right for you to approach your congressman and have the federal legislation introduced, because now what would have been the normal resistance at trying to kill that bill might turn into a push to get something passed so that it would essentially moot out the legal case, because they don't want the legal precedent set that would open that up throughout the country. So they'd rather get a piece of legislation where they can control the size of the wineries and the number of bottles that can be shipped and do it that way than to risk having a court pronouncement that says that anybody can do this.
That's right. And the courts aren't going to just restrict it. They're going to say, hey, you can. Well, you know, the problem, though, is this has been challenged on different levels, the interstate shipping, and it's went to the Supreme Court. It was at the Supreme Court level, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, and the Supreme Court basically said, no, it's the state's problem, and they threw it back at the state. And, you know, it's, I don't know, this is one of the problems that we're facing, is the fact that nobody really wants to take a look at this. Nobody really wants to be the one that's saying, okay, this is how it's going to be.
Well, and again, I mean, you'd have to dive into the particulars of that case to see how it rose up through the state courts and then into the federal court and landed at the Supreme Court. The decision that they make is constrained to the issue as it was framed in the court below. So if the issue wasn't defined correctly coming into the pipeline, to frame it so that the Supreme Court was presented with a set of facts that were now lined up and on all fours with prior Supreme Court precedent that favored invalidating the law on the Commerce Clause side, unless you teed up your facts to line up with that existing precedent, yes, you would be doomed to fail.
And that's what happened on that legislature more than likely, because it wasn't a matter of the Commerce Clause. It was just a matter of, can we ship and bring in wines and stuff? And I think
exactly.
What I'm
suggesting is your small wineries, they get together, they form an organization, and you prepare an agenda that working with a legal team that says, we are going to create a legal fund and we are going to design a case that from day one out of the gate is structured in its facts to align perfectly with a Commerce Clause challenge, so that as we move up through the tiers and eventually wind our way and evolve our case to the Supreme Court, we are teed up for them. You almost can predict the outcome because you know what the existing precedent is, follow, that make the outcome a logical progression of what they've already said.
Mm-hmm. So if it's done right, it's going to work.
If it's done right and planned out appropriately from square one, yes, it could work. And you have to pick the right plaintiff, the right set of facts, and then it has to be the original complaint that's filed in court has to be framed in such a way that it already takes in mind and has considered all the existing precedent, pro and con, that aligns your facts to be consistent with that set of the decisions the Supreme Court has issued invalidating as opposed to validating a particular piece of legislation. And you want to pick probably that state, if you want it more on a grand scale of the whole country, you would have to take a look at the three-tier systems and the legislation that precludes that shipping in all of the states that have those restrictions and select what you would consider to be the weakest or most vulnerable of the various state laws that would be susceptible to a Commerce Clause challenge, because you want that to be the set of facts that becomes the seminal case that gets routed up through the court system.
It sounds so easy. Yeah, we wish it were.
Well, you know, we all get, and the thing is, Ron, we all get so caught up in our daily lives And it's all about, you know, just survival in business from one day to the next and meeting the next month's payroll and how are the grapes coming in and how's the crop and what, you know, is do we have a bad storm? And, you know, all of the daily drudgeries that we have to confront when you're in a business like yours. And it's hard to find time to really sit down and intellectually strategize a long-term plan for how do we change the whole course of this industry. And it requires, that's why I suggested, you know, you can get that synergy from coming together and forming a group of like-minded vintners that want to make these changes, and you allocate, you know, a time out of your month when you're getting together and the sole purpose for an afternoon over a glass of wine, of course, is to discuss how do we hatch out the perfect strategy to make a change in the status quo.
And that's it. And, you know, and we've talked, I've talked to people over the years, over the last 5 years, and one particular one comes to mind is a winemaker in Arkansas. And he's, was it Arkansas or Alabama? Alabama. One in Alabama who said that he got into the wine business to make wine, and he ended up becoming a legislature, one arguing against the laws and everything in the state of Arkansas. And I hear that. That's just one that pops in my mind. But I hear things like that all the time. And it's something that we need to, as an industry, need to really take care of and need to do something, because, you know, not being able to ship to other states really does hurt us, and having to go through a distributor is, as you mentioned much earlier, very costly. Most small wineries cannot afford a distributor, and because of that, they don't get their wines out there. And it continues on the same thought is, wines from Texas. There are some fantastic wines in Texas. We never see them here in Florida. There are some wonderful wines coming out of all sorts of states around this country, and we never see them here in Florida, or other states never see them because of the way this law is now. And that's it needs to be changed. I'd love to see it happen in my time. I hope it does. I don't know if it will, but it needs to be changed.
Well, hopefully I've given you some thoughts as to a national approach to the as a solution to the problem and a pathway of organizing your cohorts around the country to that have similar interests as small vintners that would like to see that change take place but have never figured out the right pathway to accomplishing it.
Yeah, and I think that might – you gave us some great ideas and some great thoughts on this here, because it's something that needs to be done. And, you know, without a, like you say, a path, a guide to follow or a way to approach it, then we had no idea what to do. So maybe this will work. I am going to contact, I apologize. I can't think of his name, the president of the FreeTheGrapes.org. I am going to contact him and talk to him about this further, too, and what you've had to say, and see what approach they've had. So, yeah, it's some great ideas.
It's a roadmap for success, and it's just a matter of the determination of getting other like-minded folks together to collectively come together and say, we have the roadmap. Now let's put this into an action plan and make this happen. And you may say, look, we understand this may take 5 years to get this done, but it's worth it because of what we would have accomplished at the end of the day that will change our business forever.
Yes, and that's just it, forever. It will affect future wineries and future shippings and everything else forever because – and that needs to be done. It really does. Kevin, well, thank you.
Think about that. You could – I was just going to say, you could also argue it this way, that it is something that would help to create jobs because more people may be willing to enter into the business if they know they could be have a small winery and have a pathway to distribution that heretofore was never allowed to them.
And that's
and
a very
so
good
it could
point.
Actually, it could expand the business.
And that and it could also give more people jobs and stuff like that, and it can create a lot of good stuff within the business. And if states accept this, it could be more revenue for the states, too. I mean, you know, in wine taxes and stuff like that. Heaven knows that all wineries pay a lot of taxes, and, you know, it's a good way to increase state revenues that way. So, you know, you're absolutely right. Thank you so much. I know you have an appointment in a little bit here, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for your time and your ideas on this. This has been great. I've been looking forward to talking to you tonight, and you did not disappoint.
Thank you.
If you would like, if anyone would like to get in touch with you, Mayday, do you have a number that?
Sure. I can be reached via email at kevin@amblerlaw.com. That's kevin@amblerlaw.com. And my office number is 813-275-9100.
Okay, very good. So if anyone wants to, you know, ask me a question, or if anyone has any legal things, anyone in the area or something like this that they need legal help on, I am sure that he will be able to accommodate you, except if you commit a murder, he will not help you. So, thank you again, Kevin. I really do appreciate it. I look forward to your next visit out at the winery, and thank you so much for being a guest on the program tonight.
Thank you, Ron, so much. It's been a pleasure, and I enjoyed our time together.
Thank you very much. It was great.
All right. Good night.
Bye now. All right. That was fantastic. I enjoyed that. I was looking forward. I've been looking forward to Kevin being on the show. I've been looking forward all week. I was out mowing the lawn at the winery. We have a festival this weekend. I was mowing the lawn at the winery, and I'm sitting there thinking, boy, I'm really looking forward to this, what he has to say, and it was fantastic. Too bad Mike wasn't here to do his tweets, because he's always jumping on these tweets, and he's very good about that. But he'll, I'm sure, listen to the program, and we'll make comments on it. Fantastic ideas, something like this. We'll approach the Commerce Clause. This is, I really need to, and I know his name, and I can't think of it now, president of FreeTheGrapes.org. I'm going to get in touch with him and ask him if he has approached this, the idea this way or something on the different states and stuff like that. I am sure he probably has, but maybe we can get him on the program again. And I'll have him listen to the program. Maybe we can get him on again and talk to him more. Great ideas there. Great show. Thank you, Kevin, again. It was really enjoyable. And I spent more time scratching notes down here than I did anything else. So, AFRN, getting close to you leaving us. Thank you very much for listening. We do appreciate it. And going into all the different parts of the world with Armed Forces Radio Network. So, thanks a lot for your service and what you've done out there for us. So that's a couple of things here. We do have a festival this weekend. We've got vendors, and Mike always goes through the list and tells you, but I'm not as well prepared as he is on that list. I don't have it in front of me here. Sad thing is my engineer, actually my wife, puts together the list and sends it out and takes care of the vendors and everything for that, and I am busy doing other stuff the whole time, so give her thank you for that. But I don't have the list in front of me, so I'm not going to be able to tell you who is all going to be there at the show. We still have our food vendors. We have jellies and jams. We have, I don't know, a bunch of different ones we've had in the past and ones we are out for the first time. I perused the list, and we've got, I don't know, 12, 14 vendors out there this week. So come on out, take a visit with us, sit down, listen to I've got a blank on our entertainment too. Listen for a while and just enjoy the weekend. It's supposed to be nice. The rains for Saturday are supposed to be late, so this is one good thing. We've been getting a lot of rains here lately. It hasn't filled up the ponds and all that as much as we thought it would, but we've been getting a lot of rains, and it's good. But the rains that were coming out at the winery that's been coming in is supposed to hold off until later in the day Saturday. At least that's the long-term forecast. So it's going to be a wonderful day out at the winery for a for the festival. Let me find my the little clip here for the wine festival. Here we go. I'll be back in a minute and 15 seconds.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
All right. Wow, I never listened to that closely before. I got my headphones on tonight, and there's little sounds in there I never heard before. So come on out to the winery this Saturday, 11 to 4. We are looking forward to you. Should be a great day. It should be a beautiful day. We got a lot of vendors and a lot of fun scheduled. And I think that's pretty much it for tonight. I don't have anything else that I need to talk to you about. Wait a minute, maybe I do. Let me check this here. I had had something here on information. No, I don't. We'll save that for some other time. Tune in next week. That will be July 17th, and we'll do another episode of All About Wine. Hopefully, we'll get a guest on. Thank you again, Kevin, for your time. It was very interesting. And first time we've had a legislature on here that has told us things that we need to do to get laws passed. Oh, my gosh, unbelievable. So some good insight there. And we'll look forward to seeing everyone next week. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for taking your time out and listening to us. It's always great to see all the people that are part of the All About Wine family here, and we do appreciate that. Be safe out there. Have a good week, and we'll see you all next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flewn.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine.
Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.